Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio, and we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook, and what you cook with, and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food, and people who are serious about it, and care about learning everything there is to learn about it, and that's... We're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
All right. Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm Ty Diabolik, one half of your host of Finger on the Pulse. Did You Never Forget is out crushing it in the city on a cold winter is coming Monday afternoon. I am very excited. That was just Blood Orange. I'm sorry we lied, the demo, and that's because we are going to have Dev, a.k.a. Lightspeed Champion, in studio playing a little bit later today. Dev, you can say hi.
Hey, what's up?
Just right into the microphone. Here you go. There you go.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to have you.
Thanks.
Nice to see you all weekend.
What a
nice
time. I know. I've seen you like every day.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Dev had a amazing Mario costume, but the most impressive thing this weekend I saw was his magic tricks, which we will talk about later in the show. But first up is the always wonderful, always nice to see Amanda Klute from Eater.
Hello.
Amanda, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for having me.
You are the New York editor of Eater, and why don't you tell all of our listeners who may not, which I can't believe, would not know.
They may not know,
but what Eater is.
Okay, we are a group of restaurant news websites, so we cover news and gossip around the country. We cover openings, closings, chefs moving around, feuds, where to eat right now, what's hot, anything that's going on in the restaurant world, we'll write about. Even if it's rumors of someone doing this to somebody else, we'll cover it.
So how does these stories get online? What takes it from a piece of talk around the water cooler to something that you actually post on the site?
Well, it's a mix of different things. We get a lot of our news from our readers. I would say most of our news comes from our readers. They're the lifeblood of it. So if they mostly work in the industry, and they'll be like, oh, I hear Michael White is expanding, check out this, and then we'll look into it and we'll ask around. Or they'll hear something's closing, or they hear about some sort of tiff between somebody, or they sent us a complaint. A lot of times things come from PR, so they'll announce when something's opening or when something's going on. And how we decide if it's important or not is basically, it's like any news site. Some things you just know are important, like big chefs, you know you have to cover it. Small chefs, maybe you'll cover it a little bit, but not so much. And then weird and wacky things that you just find amusing yourself, you'll put it up.
Right. So it seems like you get like a lot of like clandestine meetings at food trucks
in
Midtown to get a lot of your tips.
Yeah, it's fun because we do have a lot of tipsters, and some of them make up anonymous Gmail accounts to send us tips just because they're so paranoid that they're going to get fired. And it's a weird world.
Is it sort of like those like anonymous from the White House? Like there's only one or two people who could actually know this information. So when it pops up.
Sometimes when we have a real insidery tip, I hear there's backlash within the restaurant later.
Oh.
Where, like, they're trying to figure out exactly who leaked it to us, and the chef is furious, and it's this whole, like, big to-do.
Well, since you guys are so closely tied to the restaurant industry, and it's not all the stuff that you post is positive, what is your relationship with these chefs? Is it sort of a reciprocal thing, or do you have angry chefs showing up at the office wanting to talk to somebody with a knife
yet.
In hand?
We do get a lot of angry chefs. It's kind of a fine line we have to walk because we want them to give us their information and the PR people to give us their information, but we don't want them, you know, calling me when we have to write something negative about them, because there are a lot of sites out there that just kiss ass, and we're not about that, really. We sometimes it's not all good news, and you have to write that a restaurant is not doing well, or that it's closing, or that people hate the chef, or that he's crazy. You know, we'll write that stuff, and I get a lot of angry phone calls, but I do have to think about that sometimes when chefs want to hang out, or when they want to be friends with me, and I'm like, well,
right.
One of these days I might write something bad about you, and then it's going to hurt our friendship. So I try to, it's a fine line you have to walk.
You know, the Times restaurant review probably was, and still is, a bit of the gold standard of restaurant reviews. You know, you get, the goal is the Times at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
But Eater, I would say, has been probably one of the biggest game changers as far as website reviews of restaurants. How has internet culture affected restaurants, you know, with things like Yelp or Eater, where it seems like restaurants don't even have a couple of weeks, a month to open the door?
Yeah, I think it's sped up the review process a lot, and it's trickled up, I guess, to the reviewers. So now Adam Platt is reviewing a restaurant when it's 1 month old, and Sam Sifton's there when it's 2 months old. So there's that. And then also, you have the Yelpers in on day one. We do a post usually a week after a restaurant opens called Good News, Bad News, where we kind of round up what everyone's saying about it already to be like, this is what people are saying immediately. This is the deal. So it's made everything a lot faster. And so a lot of the chefs that have the money will do longer friends and family. They'll do like 2 or 3 weeks where they make sure everything is ironed out with their staff and the chef before they open. Restaurants that don't have that kind of luxury have to just open and hope that, you know, all goes well.
So what have you seen opening in restaurants recently, trends, things like that, that you've really enjoyed, that the staff, the eater, both on a local level and then a national level?
I mean, this isn't really a new trend, but Italian restaurants have just been going strong for a while now, and it seems like any chef that opens an Italian restaurant has it made. Like, it's going to do fine. More recently, in the past couple weeks, a bunch of Thai restaurants have opened, like more high-end Thai food. Harold Dieterle just opened Kin Shop in Greenwich Village, and he owns Perilla, and it was on Top Chef. And then there's this restaurant called Lotus of Siam that's about to open this week, and it's an import from Vegas. Jonathan Gold called it the best Thai food in America 10 years ago, but I went to a preview of that on Friday, and it was awesome. It's really solid stuff.
So it's a lot of these restaurants that sort of have gotten a bad reputation because they were once good and then became mediocre, but now are back on the rise.
Yeah, and it's like the people are trying to do new things with ethnic food, kind of elevating it, making it a little more pricey, but maybe a little more flavorful, and not just like the gloppy stuff you're used to, not the regular pad thai from takeout, but like elevating it, cleaner flavors, brighter flavors.
What is elevated Thai food? I don't think I've ever had it.
Well, like, there was one awesome dish I had at this Lotus place, which was, it was just a chicken wing, like a fried chicken wing, but they stuffed it with mirepoix and diced chicken, and it was just like, there's something amazing about it.
Right.
And there was this crispy rice that just, the lime was brighter. It was just, everything seemed so much cleaner and nicer.
It's like that first time you go to a Mexican restaurant that wasn't Taco
Exactly,
Bell.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, I didn't even know that.
You're like, oh, Mexican food can be good and
right.
And healthy sometimes.
And you're like, oh, what they've been calling quesadillas are not actually quesadillas.
Yeah. But nationally, you know, you still have food trucks, you still have farm-to-table stuff. Like, that's going on all over the place.
So Eater, in the last year or so, year or two, has made a shift to being a much more national-focused blog, and you said that you have a new editor who's been working on a national approach, and that it's really shifted the way that people look at food, and, you know, that traffic has come to the site. How do the regional editors play with the national editor?
Well, now it's kind of easier being a regional editor because you don't have to worry about national stories. Like, when New York was the main site, I used to have to cover things going on here, but also, you know, if something's happening with Gordon Ramsay's empire around the country or around the world, I have to cover that too. And so now everything reality show related, anything on TV, anything that has to do with big celebrity chefs, the national site gets to cover it. So it's easier for us regional editors to focus in on our neighborhoods, our restaurants, things like that. And our new national editor, his name is Raphael Brion, is just an amazing internet guy. Like, he knows how to uncover videos that no one can find. He's just like on top of all these big stories, and has put together a great site that's doing really well.
That's great. All right, well, we're gonna take a little break. We're gonna come back, talk about the big event, the
Eater Awards
coming up in just a week.
1 week from today.
1 week from today.
Yeah.
All right, we're talking with Amanda Klute from Eater. She's the New York editor. We're gonna have Dev Hines playing some songs later, and a big shout out to Fairway Market. Beautiful, beautiful location out in Red Hook. If you've never been, it's the place to go for all your produce and just a good date spot. Go to IKEA, walk around the pier, hang out, get some, I don't know, go
get
to the wing bar.
Roll.
Get a lobster roll. Like I said, I'm Terry Diabolik, one half your hosts. Finger on the Pulse, we have a special track for Matt and Kin's upcoming album, Sidewalks. Big, big shout out to them. They just played two incredible sold out shows at Webster last week. They were phenomenal. So this one is called Ice Melts.
Feelings took a try. Ice melts all around me. Water down, it will water down. It will never be. Ice melts all around me. Together we will, together we will make it freeze.
Ice Melts, Matt and Kim, off their upcoming album, Sidewalks, comes out tomorrow. Go pick up a copy. I've been listening to it all weekend. It is awesome. And congrats to them again on two awesome, awesome shows at Webster. We are here with Amanda Klute from Eater. She's the New York editor. And we are talking about the New York Eater Awards. It's new. First year.
Yep. First annual Eater Awards.
First annual Eater Awards. So why don't you tell our listeners at home what they can expect from the Eater Awards and what it's all about?
Basically, we wanted to celebrate some of our favorite restaurants across the country and some of our favorite chefs. So we're going to have, I think, 4 or 5 main awards in every city. And now we're in New York, San Francisco, LA, Portland, Miami, Chicago, and Austin. So readers in each of those cities are going to be nominating their picks for Restaurant of the Year, Chef of the Year, So Hot Right Now, which is the best newcomer, and also best bartender, mixologist, you know, beverage person extraordinaire. So they're going to nominate them. We're going to put it to a vote. And the people or restaurants that are the most popular, like most popular 2 or 3, the editors will choose from. So it's kind of a good mix of editors' choices and readers' choices, and then we're going to feat them all next Monday at a big gala event here in New York City.
And where is that event going to be held?
It's going to be at Public, and it's not going to be, we're not going to do a kind of, you know, announcement of all the awards. We'll announce it on the site, so then the event can be more about the party.
Oh, that's great. And is it open to the public?
It's not, but maybe next year.
Maybe next year. So, only 5 categories, or are there other categories that you're going to be?
Well, for the national awards, we're going to do 5 categories, and then I think for New York, we're going to do maybe 6 to a dozen more fun, silly ones, and for the national side as well. So we'll have Shit Show of the Year, of course, because it's Eater.
Do you have one in mind?
I mean, there are a few that I have to think about. I think they might also be going up against shit shows across the country. I have to figure that out.
Yes.
So I'm sure a New York shit show might be able to take home the award this year.
New York, like any other city, it just does things bigger and better than any other event.
We have some of the worst restaurants. Shang comes to mind as my favorite shit show. People have also nominated The Lion, Kenmare, Xiao Yi, which I actually like, and I love it. The guy Eddie Huang is a chef, and he's kind of a character in himself. People have nominated Colicchio and Sons and Pulino's and Fatty Q, but those are restaurants that are liked by a lot of people.
Yeah,
so they're not going to make it on the list, but Shang is pretty monumental when it comes to shit shows, so we'll see how it fares.
So can you talk about who you think the front runners are without being biased?
I'm sure Michael White is going to be a front runner for a couple of the categories. A lot of people have nominated him for Chef of the Year, Restaurant of the Year with Maria, and also Best Newcomer with Osteria Marini. So he kind of...
He's just crushing it.
He's crushing it this year. This is his year. Teresi Italian Specialties is a big one. I mean, everyone's obsessed with that place.
Obsessed.
So, so good, like both for lunch and for dinner. So, and they kind of brought something new to the table. Like no one had ever seen that kind of place before.
Right. I mean, they were, they more or less got picked up by Le Fooding just because they were so great. They needed one more restaurant and they got on there.
Yeah, it's great. It's just really good Italian food. It's affordable and they do a good deli lunch. It's awesome.
It's awesome. It's so simple yet not.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah, you can't do it, but
you're
amazed that they are doing it so simply and so well.
It's good enough. I think a great meal comes when you can sit down and be like, "Oh, I can make this at home." And then you go, "No, you don't even know what's
my
going on."
Sucks.
Yeah.
But here, you know, in Brooklyn, Roberta's is nominated for a couple of things, Prime Meats, Brooklyn Fare. There are a lot of things going on. A lot of places. Italy, I think, might be a front runner for best concept of the year. Just because it's crazy.
I mean, there's nothing else like it.
Yeah. Who would have thought to spend so much money opening this giant Italian food market / food hall, and then it's packed every night?
Mario Batali.
Yeah.
And any dark horses? Anybody you think they're going to be surprised? Even just nomination. I have to say, though, I think even probably just being a front runner.
Mm-hmm.
Or nominated is good enough. Because, I mean, how many restaurants are there? How many chefs?
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, people have really, when they're nominated by so many people, you can tell that they've set themselves apart. Like, they're doing something excellent. But in the Chef of the Year, Gabrielle Hamilton was nominated by a couple people. And, you know, she's doing solid work over at Prune. People really respect what she's doing. So it'd be nice. Someone nominated Daniel Holtzman, who owns the meatball shop.
Oh, okay.
Which might fall under Best Concept of the Year, too, because it just... You know, they open this meatball restaurant on the Lower East Side, a neighborhood everyone hates going to. Well, you know, food people hate going to.
Yes.
And he just killed it. Like, there's lines every night, and it's just a really great concept. You spend under $10 for dinner.
Yeah, it's great.
It's delicious.
Sometimes it's the simplest thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So is there going to be any... Who's cooking? Any entertainment at the event?
We have the Franks cooking.
Oh, my boys.
We have Michael White, April Bloomfield from the John Dory and the Breslin and the Spotted Pig. We have Brad Farmery from Public. Christina Tosi from Momofuku Milk Bar will be doing...
Desserts. Yes.
And then this chef named Andy Ricker that I don't know, but he's from a restaurant called Pock Pock out west. So that should be fun.
I love
trying new stuff like that. And then we have a couple big surprises I can't reveal.
Oh, you can't?
Food-related surprises.
Can you give a hint?
It's food related.
That's
and
oh.
it's late night. Late night food related.
Okay.
Which is,
all right. So it should be good. So maybe some cocktails.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of cocktails. And it should be great.
If you could bring back Alex from Death & Co., if you could somehow transport him from the West Coast back here.
Yeah. I'm excited to see who will win the Mixology Award because there's so many great bartenders out there and they don't really get their due sometimes.
They've been getting their due this year.
They've been getting their due, but I think a lot of the average diner doesn't know them by name. They'll know the bars, but
right.
I think a lot of people don't know, oh, this specific person at Clover Club is actually excellent.
I'm voting for a Dram. That's because that's my local...
That's a good spot.
It's a good spot.
Great when you're waiting for pies and thighs.
Oh my God. Big shout out to Frank and the whole team out there.
Yeah.
They're awesome. It's don't get me wrong, Hotel Del Mano, fantastic, but it's just always packed. And like when I want like a really nice cocktail and I just want to be able to relax and some fried chicken.
There's a new place around here called The Narrows.
That's right.
Really good.
I haven't been there yet.
Good, cheap, you know?
You're awesome.
Not paying... Cocktails now in Manhattan are like $18 sometimes.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It really... I think that'll be probably the biggest stopping point or the holding back. Just it's like people want more and more cocktails, but at some point, you know, $12 I can see.
Yeah.
$18.
It's ridiculous.
Like, I don't care how much booze you cram in there. It's just not.
Yeah, I don't care if the herbs are from the garden and like they're hand juicing everything every morning. Like $18 is absurd.
It's absurd. That's like 2 6-packs for my bodega.
Yeah.
Not to belittle what you're doing. I'm just saying.
Think of how many four mochas.
Four locos.
Locos you get.
Yeah. What Frank Bruni? What $350 a piece? That's
$350 a piece.
Wow. So yeah, that's a night. That's a night for you and your friends.
Yeah.
Anyway, Amanda, let me thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Big fan of Eater. Let's do all the nuts and bolts. The website is.
It is eater.com. My specific site is ny.eater.com. And from there, you can access all our other sites in all the other cities.
Great. And Eater Awards 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And the winners will be announced?
They'll be announced next Monday, so check that out.
Okay, awesome. It's going to be great. I will probably see you there.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
Awesome, great. So we're going to play a couple of songs, some of our favorite discoveries from CMJ this year. And coming up with the wonderful Dev Hines from Lightspeed Champion / Blood Orange / The Magic Show that your kids will want to see at the birthday next year. I'm Terry Diabolik. I'm half your host of Finger on the Pulse. Listen to Snacky Tunes. Thank you so much to Fairway for sponsoring, Roberta's for the delicious food, Jack Inslee, RecTech, producing engineering. Here we go. We'll be right back.
nicely to them and try and get them to come closer.
Thank you.
You're listening to Snacky Tunes. That was just a quick three set of our CMJ favorites. That was First Aid Kit covering Fever Ray's When I Grow Up. Before that was Baths, as in I'm taking a bath, Animals. And then Royal Bangs, New Scissors. Three bands you should check out. All good stuff from CMJ. In studio with us is the wonderful Dev Hines of Blood Orange and Lightspeed Champion. Dev, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for having me, man.
You are really enjoying that pizza.
Yeah, I just kind of destroyed like two-thirds of it in a second.
So, you know, we know you from Lightspeed Champion from being on Dinner with the Band.
Yeah.
And we made some delicious
falafel
and hummus.
Yeah.
And how do you do Muharama?
That was it.
But now you're starting a new side project, Blood Orange. Why don't you tell us about that project?
Yeah, it's it actually started, I guess, just over a couple years ago. I'm always writing songs at home, and I just started writing songs for like pop artists and stuff. And on a side note, I'd had like a weird throat operation where I was kind of working out my voice and stuff, and just ended up writing these songs. I guess are kind of more influenced by like kind of 80s soul and kind of funk and pop that I've always listened to. So yeah, and then I've been doing a ton of songs, and then I've actually done an album now, and kind of finished mixing and mastering it. And
what's the name of the album?
It's called Coastal Grooves, I think.
You think?
Well, I had that name. I have names like so far in advance, it's kind of silly. So I came up with that name like a couple years ago when I misread a Tropicana bottle.
Oh. Well, what did it actually turn out to be?
Coastal Groves.
Oh.
That's usually
funky orange juice.
That's usually how I come up with names for anything, just mishair and stuff.
So how is this going to be different than your Lightspeed Champion stuff?
It's, I feel like it's a lot more direct. Like, it's kind of, the songs are, I don't say simple, but there's a simplicity to it, which is kind of taken from, like, from a songwriting aspect, which is taken from, like, I guess, the pop music that I've always loved, you know, and it's kind of upbeat, and it's kind of, like, dancey as well, but I know, lights and stuff is pretty. I always feel like it's like a mass of wires that you can't be bothered to fix. That's how I always view Lightspeed. Like, I don't know, like everything's connected and everything is working like good, but then you know, you gotta like sort it out and untangle stuff. And this is more like a good adapter that just works fine.
Okay. All right. Well, let's hear a song. What are we gonna hear first?
I'm gonna hear a song called Bad Girls, which actually wrote a few weeks ago, and I recorded a version. And incidentally, there's a version recorded with Solange Knowles for her album.
That's awesome.
It's gonna be cool. It's gonna be a good record, I think.
Okay. Cool. All right. So. All right, so this is Blood Orange, live on Snacky Tunes. Here we go.
I should say I've never actually ever even played or sung this out loud before. Yeah.
Everything that you seem to ignore, the alcohol you stole and never bore, the taxi ride on your way home, the taxi deceive her. You never know where you're going. It's everything you seem to ignore. The alcohol you stole never bore. The bed you wake up in, that's not your own. The night you worked out your end goal. Away. I look down on you so deep down, know that we're the same. It's stupid thinking that you would want to come play my game. Tell me what's wrong. Tell me what's wrong.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Very nice.
I should have warmed my voice up a little.
Oh, yeah. So that's going to be on the new album as well?
No, it's actually not. Yeah, because I finished the album so long ago. But I played a show recently and I made a, like a bootleg kind of CD of a bunch of songs I've done since finishing the album. And I was just kind of handing them out so people see me. And give them a copy. Like, I don't know, like, it's like 10 songs I did since the album, which just exist, you know, so I don't know what to do with them.
So being on the road a lot, as you are, and also having a famous fruit, if you will, or mystical fruit as your new project, what do you like to eat when you're out on the road or out on tour?
It's funny, you know, because it depends where you are. If you're in England, for example, the best bet is a store called Marks and Spencer's.
Oh, yeah.
Which is which is actually, I used to work there when
oh,
I was
really?
Growing up. My dad was a manager in a local store, so I spent a lot of my childhood at Marks and Spencer's. But it is probably the best place to go because you just, the quality of the, like, instant food there is so much better than everywhere else.
Yeah, it's like Dean DeLuca's here in
New York. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, England's a tricky place for food. It's to say the least. Like, it's, you know, it's funny. Like, I remember when I moved here and I'd always say to people how, like, when people say a place isn't good or they didn't have a good meal in New York, I feel like that means that they didn't really enjoy it that much. Whereas in England, that means that you had a severe case of poisoning and, you know, you know, it was like completely like unedible and, you know, and so that's a big difference there. But, you know, in Europe, it's cool because you can kind of experiment, you know, because there's so many places in Europe that really do love their food, and people are usually excited if you talk to them about sharing that with you.
Now, you've changed your dietary habits quite a few times, since I've known you.
Yeah,
but you said growing up, you had like a not a great stomach, but yeah. Then you came to America and you changed. Can you talk about the different type of foods you've eaten throughout your life?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I guess growing up, I had like a really intense like stomach issue where I kind of missed a lot of school. Well, I was just like off sick and stuff, and so at that point, I actually had to cut out like gluten, lactose, and a ton of other stuff, fizzy drinks, didn't drink alcohol, etc., spicy foods. And then I've kind of warmed my stomach up over the last like 10 years or so, and coming to New York, I just kind of, well, you know, being in England, I just kind of I love food, but it's difficult, especially if you have like a bad stomach, to eat what is good for you whilst being in London.
Right. Stuff,
you know? And then, so coming to New York was kind of like oh my God, wow, there's so much food that I can eat and it's not weird, you know? Because a lot of stuff is seen as weird in London, food-wise.
Such as?
Well, for example, I guess like a pizza with no cheese, since we're at Roberta's right now.
Right.
It seems weird, but, I don't know, they're not as accustomed to changing towards your dietary needs, is what I should say.
Where in New York, especially, people go, I know you have 8 items in this, I only want 4.
Yeah.
And I can add 2 more in.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and some places like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's cool. But, since being here, I guess I've been, I don't know, what have I been eating? Well, I actually hadn't eaten beef for 13 years of my life.
And then you came here?
And then I came here, and that all went out the window.
What was your first beef meal?
I think it was Dumont Burger.
Not a bad place.
You know.
That's a big meal for your first beef. It was. For those who don't know, Dumont Burger is probably the champion of Bedford. Giant burgers. Yeah. And they're Bloody Marys and onion rings is enough to put you back on your couch for quite the afternoon.
Oh my God, it really does. It was. But then, you know, I started experimenting with... It's funny you're talking about Thai food, because I really love Thai food. And I'm really interested about these restaurants that are opening.
So, awesome. Yeah. All right, let's have you play another song.
Yeah, sure.
What are you going to play? Which incarnation of yourself are you going to represent right now?
I think I might play... a new Lightspeed song.
Great.
I did a while ago. I have to have my laptop on my lap because I don't know the lyrics.
Okay, alright.
Well, so give me a second.
Yeah, so we'll do that. So you're listening to Lightspeed Champion on Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out to Fairway for all your culinary and restaurant needs. Fairway Market, Red Hook, other great locations at the city. Big shout out to Always as Roberta's. To the man at the helm of all this, Patrick, for being in Bon Appetit this month. Check out his profile on himself and him explaining why $140 turkey is what needs to be on your table this coming Thanksgiving. Dev, you good?
Give me one more second.
Okay, I need one more second. All right, Jack Inslee, RecTech, thank you so much. I'm Ferry on the Pulse. Big shout out to Amanda from Eater and all the Eater people. And Eater Awards, don't forget to vote. Amanda, where can you vote for the awards?
We're going to start the voting either late this afternoon or early tomorrow. So go to eater.com and all of our regional sites to vote.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Okay, great.
Okay, I changed my mind. I'm going to do Blood Orange song.
Okay, great.
From the album.
Okay, great. So here we go. Dev as Blood Orange here live on Snacky Tunes.
Well,
Wake up, tasty trees. Your quilts are incomplete. Love will stay in bed. Ambivalence your head. Distance into brief. This mongrel lost his keys. Owner set me free. So the ocean cleans my feet. Please, this can't be true. Oh, don't be my undoing. Mother sure will cry when she sees our spark has died. Chapel on the hill, the freeway onto Will. Wedding clothes all gone, my Cadillac won't run. Tasty treats. Your quilts are incomplete. Mother sure will cry when she sees our spark has died. Chapel on the hill, the freeway onto Will. Wedding clothes all gone, my Cadillac won't run.
Dev Hines as Blood Orange here live on Snacky Tunes. What was the name of that song again?
Instantly Blank.
Instantly Blank, coming off the new album.
Yeah. Coastal Grooves, I think.
So Dev, you know, one of the things I learned about you this weekend are your magic tricks. And I knew that you had been doing magic since the summer.
Yeah.
But
you witnessed the actual, like, kind of the first
week of magic. Yeah, you're like, hey, I just picked up a deck of cards and I was trying stuff in the cab. And then I haven't really seen you for a few months until this weekend.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I've been practicing. So what have you been up to? I mean, what's your magic fancy?
Basically what happened was I'm a pretty obsessive person and, it's pretty funny cause you know, my interest in magic is really just as much as like most people, which is, it's awesome when someone does it to you.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm
right.
Yeah. And it was kind of like funny, like joking around, just kind of playing with cards. And then I started to pass time, like making up my own tricks. And I guess I developed a real interest in it and started doing a lot of tricks to people that people seemed to be like kind of like impressed by them, which I thought was pretty funny because in my mind, they seemed like they were so see-through and...
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I know it's not magic when I'm watching you do it.
Wait, what?
I know that something is going on, but I